Great. So hand straight to Nick.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. And good morning. So we're going to continue on with Agenda Paper 21B, which sets out the staff analysis and recommendations for the scope of management performance measures. This paper is commencing the board's redeliberations on the proposals for management performance measures, and following the staged approach, this paper seeks to first confirm that the board wants to proceed with the management performance measure requirements. It then assesses feedback on the scope of the proposals, asking whether the board would like to explore possible approaches for expanding the scope of management performance measures. And then if that is the case, we ask the board for feedback on possible approaches that could be explored and the factors that could be used to evaluate them. So similar to the last paper, I'd like to introduce each topic individually and then ask the questions. So on the first topic, regarding proceeding with the proposals for the management performance measure requirements, the paper explains that many stakeholders provided feedback that including information about managed performance measures in the financial statements would provide added transparency and discipline to information that users find useful. While some stakeholders raise concerns, the paper explains how some of these concerns are addressed within the proposals themselves, that some of these concerns will be addressed through the future discussions on the detailed requirements for management performance measures, and that in the staff's view, overall feedback provides evidence that the benefits of the proposals would exceed the costs. So the question for the board on page 12 of the paper is, does the board agree to proceed with the proposals in the exposure draft requiring an entity to include information about management performance measures in the financial statements?
Okay, thank you, Nick. Nick, other Nick.
Thanks, Hans, and thanks for another good paper. I mean, I think it's important to recognize that there are some concerns here, but the response to our proposals has been overwhelmingly positive, extremely positive amongst users. I think the points that the staff set out in paragraph 11 of the paper are of particular note. The feedback from regulators, which had been an area of concern for us, the academic evidence, and indeed also the experience that we gathered in our fieldwork exercise. I'm sure many of us will recall that we entered this space with a degree of trepidation and a degree of caution. And against that, it's very welcome to see such positive feedback on our proposals. I also welcome what staff say in paragraph 20 of the paper, and I think it's also necessary that we will go back scope of public communications, which was a particular area of concern, and also our guidance on faithful representation, but we'll come back to that at a later date. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. I share your surprise about how incredibly positive the feedback has been, given that we, when we started, had our own hesitation. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. Just like what Nick said, I think there are lots of positive support of, you know, introduce NPM disclosure in the financial statement. I just want to comment on paragraph 23. I think some when we conducted outreach activities, some stakeholder concerns about whether the NPM will be, you know, would it be auditable or not. So I like the, you know, the arguments included in paragraph 23, particularly the evidence from IAASB. They think that those measures would be auditable. And this, one of the reasons some people said that because maybe some NPM are not based on a defined accounting framework. But as Nick mentioned, that our objective of requiring entity to disclose NPM is try to improve the transparency and aiding discipline. From my point of view, if some NPM are not based on a defined accounting framework, I think disclose those NPM it's really necessary because it can you know, improve the transparency. How those NPM are calculated, and also those information should be audited to make sure they provide reliable information to the investors. I think this kind of discipline should have. So I agree what have said in the paragraph 23. About, I think another concern from practice is about the additional complexity, as mentioned in paragraph 26C. I also, sometimes I don't buy this kind of argument, because for those MPMs actually already been, you know, disclosed in other public communication document. So I don't think it will take too much time for them to be disclosed in the notes. I think one maybe complexity arising from practice, maybe because our requirements will require those entities to provide reconciliation, you know, detailed reconciliation disclosure. But I think, as Nick mentioned, because this is exactly what users need to improve the transparency of those, you know, MPMs. So considering cost and benefit, I fully supported the staff's proposal to include those information about MPM in the financial statement. Thank you.
Martin.
Yes, thanks, Hans. Only a brief comment on what is mentioned in paragraph 23, which is a grant. Are these measures audible? And IAASB have said, okay, clearly it's audible, but the question is, what does it mean? Because when I participated in outreach, there was big confusion about that, because many people thought, okay, what does audit mean? Is it a kind that the calculation maybe of a adjusted number is then audited by the accounting firms? Clearly, yes, it could be done, but many people thought, okay, what audit means, okay, that the auditors agree that it is a good performance measure of the entity, which I think is not part of the audit. And that was where people were concerned about what audit does mean, because if it is an audited number, maybe the auditor has agreed that is a good number to demonstrate performance for a certain entity, which I think clearly is not then what would be the objective of this audit. And I think we have to make that clear. When, like in segment reporting, when auditors doing a kind of what is used as a performance measure in segment reporting, they don't agree that that is a perfect number which should reflect the segment performance, but they maybe do the calculation of that number that is then audited. And I think that we need a little bit work on, because as I said, when I participated in outreach, there was a big confusion about what audit of this numbers mean.
Yeah. Good point. Mary.
Thanks, Hans. Like others, you know, I am relieved and pleased that we had, I think, very positive responses, particularly on the issue of auditability. Yes, some challenges were identified, but I think it's very important that it wasn't shown to be a significant roadblock for us proceeding. I did want to flag, in addition to the point that the staff highlighted about completeness of management before in paragraph 15, because public communications are too broad. I think in addition to that, I think the issue that's raised less specifically in paragraph B also will be important for follow-up, which is maybe sharpening our articulation of how faithful representation applies. And I think that may relate perhaps indirectly to the point Martin just made about if we explain more clearly faithful representation, I think then it might help with some of that tension about what does it mean to audit an MPM. But overall, thank you. And I think it was very helpful that you brought out the range of responses and who we heard from on the auditability issues.
Okay. Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
Thirteen.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. Continue.
Thank you. So on the second topic in the paper, we consider stakeholder feedback on the scope of management performance measures. And now in this paper, we are seeking, asking the board to consider the aspect of scope related to the definition being limited to subtotals of income and expenses. Public communications, which we sometimes also refer to as scope, will be considered separately in a future paper. So many stakeholders provided feedback that measures other than subtotals of income and expenses also provide useful information and could also benefit from the transparency and discipline provided by the requirements. However, adapting the proposals to include other measures would require time and resources that propose a risk to delaying the project timeline. This risk will, of course, vary depending on the extent of any expanded scope. So at this stage of the project, we're not asking what the extent of any expanded scope should be, but whether further work should be done to assess possible approaches to that expansion. Whether we should do additional work to assess possible approaches to that expansion. So based on the potential for balance between the benefits that could be achieved from that work and the additional time that would be required, the staff recommendation is that the board explore the possible approaches. So the question for the board on page 16 is, does the board agree to explore possible approaches to expanding the scope of management performance measure requirements to include measures other than subtotals of income and expenses?
Okay. Sue.
Thanks, Hans. I'd feel a bit curmudgeonly if I was to say no. So I'll give you a cautious yes. I'm happy to explore, given that that's certainly what a lot of people have asked for. I'm a little bit cautious, though, for a couple of reasons. One is that I think that the scope that we went out with was a perfectly legitimate scope, given what I thought our main focus was, which was really to say we wanted to do a project that had very sort of clear objectives, that was, you know, consciously focused on mainly on performance side of the of reporting, with a main focus on the income statement. And for me, focusing on management performance measures that were subtotals of income and expense was a perfect complement to that, because it's a good complement to the increased structure on the face of the income statement, which removes some existing freedom, but opened up the possibility to then allow management to give their perspective if that couldn't be accommodated on the face, and also gave the benefit of more discipline and transparency around, you know, important performance metrics. But I think that's a perfectly legitimate scope. And I think we need to be careful, because it's always, or often at least, the case that we could do more with projects, and there's good stuff that can be done. And I'm not questioning whether it wouldn't be useful to have these extra expansions. But I think the good thing about this project is, because we have been pretty focused, we've got quite good momentum, we've got a lot of support, and I think it would be great to deliver these benefits on the performance reporting side of things to investors within a time frame that's good, you know, timely response from a standard setting perspective. And I worry a little bit, if we start going down different paths, we might take too long and we'll derail some of those benefits. And I think we could justify where we are at the moment. Also, I think we need to be cautious that we don't inadvertently remove some of the benefits of our proposals. So if we were to expand the scope so that there's many more performance measures captured, which could arise depending on how we were to cut it, I think it would quickly be the case that we might get pushback that the disclosures are too much. So we might lose some of the transparency in particular that we're getting from the set of disclosures that we're proposing around the management performance measures. So I'd hate to have to give up some of the benefits that we get from the sort of focus of the scope we've got now, with, you know, concerns then about disclosure overload, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we need to be careful. And also, whatever we do, if we do intend to do decide that it's a good idea to expand the scope, we're going to need to be careful that the way that we can define the scope is sufficiently clear that we can stick to this being a mandatory requirement, because I think that was one of the good things about these proposals as well, that you definitely would get this information for the management performance measures. And so we need to have a robust way of defining it. So with a lot of caution, then yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Sue. Anne.
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, I'd like to say no to the question, but I can't say no because there seems to be this such strong feedback saying that there are limitations in our proposed approach, and the staff have done a great job presenting that material for us. So, for example, showing us that the ratios are so commonly presented, and indeed the ratio, the incidence of the ratios being presented is more common or as common as adjusted line items. So I do wonder the extent to which the support that we talked about in relation to question one, the support for MPMs, is based on the idea that these ratios are going to fit in with the MPMs. I think that I will be voting yes to agree to explore, but with these cautions, with these concerns that the amount of time that could be involved, the things that Sue is alluding to, I had also thought about that the time involved, you know, I was concerned about things that you bring up, like the inability to do the reconciliation for some of the additional performance measures, when we know that the reconciliation was a key part of our platform of proposals that was strongly supported and would be very useful. So yes, agree, but cautiously, and I think we have to be very careful not to expand to the extent that we lose the ability to deliver the benefits in a timely way. Thank you.
Bonsoir.
Yes, thank you. I'm very much aligned with what you and Anne have explained. However, differently from them, I don't hesitate to say no. And I say no as part of the mainstream of this project. I'm totally supportive that we would, as is mentioned in paragraph 41 of the paper, would allocate specific resources to a sub-project that would deal with the possible broadening of the scope. And because I'm very supportive that we give a positive feedback to the comments and the requests that we have received. But if I say no within the stream of this project, it's because I'm like Sue said, and as in fact we have all decided back in January, we want to deliver timely. And whatever digression we take that looks simple, not very time consuming, it is just too much away from that timeliness, from that my point of view. In addition to the arguments that have already been given, I think a separate sub-project, call it whatever we like, has a number of merits. First of all, I think it would be less constrained in scope, because if we want to keep this in the mainstream of the project, we are going to have a cut here or a cut there that we have no better reason to make than the cut that we've done, except that the cut that we've done has the logic that Sue has reminded us. So we're going to cut in a way which is not going to be satisfactory. I think we may, if we want to be broad enough, you know, for example, capture what is prevalent, like take an example of free cash flows, inevitably we will have to consider amendments to the cash flow statement. And in fact, in the next paper, we asked not to do so. So I think we are just, you know, it is a form of a Pandora box that we would be opening within the mainstream of the project. So I support it, but on a different stream of work with different people. I mean, of course, interaction where needed for the know-how and everything, but with, in a way, different teams.
Okay, that's a clear no. Nick?
So my view is that we need to give this potential extension of the scope serious consideration. It's clear that our stakeholders take a more holistic view of performance beyond measures that are simply derived from the P&L. You know, there's a very strong message in the comment letters and the outreach which we've done with investors. They clearly would welcome the transparency and the discipline that our proposals would bring by expanding the scope to other measures. But also other stakeholders, including those from the preparer community and regulators, see utilities, they see benefits in bringing all their non-GAAP measures that are derived from the IFRS financial statements in a single location with consistent disclosures. That's a very clear message. So we have a very strong message. But for me, what is almost more telling is the breadth of that message. It is from users, it's from user groups, it's from preparers and some of the preparer groups, some of whom have been some of our most ardent critics over the years. National standard setters, accounting bodies, audit firms, regulators, stock exchanges, academics. You know, it's such a rare confluence of interests that come together on this issue. I find it quite extraordinary. The three further points, we've talked about timeliness, and I accept there is some kind of trade-off potentially in terms of timeliness. But equally, you know, over the last 3 years, I've seen this our organization operate in a very timely fashion on particular issues and be able to move in a very adept at moving fast when it needs to. And then I think about the alternatives of hiving this off, delaying it, parking it somewhere else. What does that mean in practice? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years before we address this issue? So I'm not convinced around the timeliness. Equally, you know, the work I've done or the thought I've given in terms of the modifications that would be required to adapt our existing proposals, I'm not convinced they're unduly complex. I certainly don't think we'd need to make amendments to the cash flow statement to come up with a reasonable set of proposals that would allow us to extend the scope. And I guess my last comment is, I think whatever we do, we need to respond to this feedback, given what we've heard. We cannot be silent on this issue. So we will either make the inclusion of these measures mandatory, they'll be required, they could be permitted, or we're going to have to prohibit them. I think being silent isn't an option for us here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. So that's a clear yes. Zach?
We'll pop one more up for the clear yeses. I think from my perspective, Nick eloquently said most of what I wanted to say about the variety of stakeholders that have asked for this expansion. I think that's rare. I think it compels us to respond and to think through it. I also am less concerned, or I believe going in, that there's less complexity in the expansion than we might think. For example, the ratios themselves that we're talking about, I tend not to get concerned about division in financial statements of two numbers as long as they're already defined. So I think there are ways that we could think through the expansion and minimize the complexity going forward that would be worthwhile. But also, I think there was a clear message, both from preparers, from users, that we're actually adding cost by only focusing on one area. And that if we're going to do that cost benefit analysis, we should think carefully, not just about the costs of the expansion, but the costs they've identified in leaving the expanded metrics out. So for that reason, I certainly support looking into the expansion of the scope.
Thank you, Zach. Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans, and thanks, Nick, for the paper. In principle, I do not support the staff's recommendation because of the reasons in paragraph 39. I think the scope of the exposure draft has a focus on information about performance in the statement of profit or loss. I think that expanding the scope of MPM's code beyond the scope of the proposal. And we already have many other issues to deal with at the same time in this project. I acknowledge the feedback on this issue, as I also acknowledge the feedback we got, for example, the statement of cash flows. I think that most of the respondents also would like to see more review of the IS7 but we are not taking these. And then, therefore, I support exploring these in the future, but not in this project. Thank you.
Mary?
I think I'll characterize myself as sitting between Sue and Francoise, perhaps. Like Tadeo, very skeptical about trying to expand in the scope of this project the MPMs that are covered by mandatory requirements. Like others, I think we've had such significant feedback that we do have to evaluate that feedback thoughtfully, not just looking for reasons to bat it back, which I don't think the staff would do, but to make sure we understand the messages and, as Zach pointed out, some of the cost-benefit implications. But I am very cautious to reluctant, so I guess that makes me the curmudgeon that Sue talked about, to expand the scope in any significant way. And I think, we could make it clear, not only Sue's point about there's a logic and a discipline to the scope of our project, but also that any constraints we put on are not criticisms of other non-GAAP measures that are outside the scope of our work, that we have a focus. And I think it's really important because we started out by saying how pleased and relieved we were. And I think it was a lot of hard work on the part of everybody involved, communicating the logic and the benefits of including MPMs. We've brought a lot of people a long way. And I think if we had a very significant expansion of the population covered by MPM, setting aside the timing, the project management, risks from timelines, we also, I think, would have a very significant risk of some people saying, okay, you've made me too nervous. This is too big a change. And I think we have to be very cautious about the great being the enemy of the good. So I think it's, we have to be, as we assess the feedback that we got on this matter of scope, to think also about conditions and terms and bases that people gave us for supporting, including a requirement to disclose and reconcile MPMs in financial statements, and be careful that we don't endanger that support. And as I think about that, I can't help myself peeking ahead to, if I think I will say I support the staff recommendation to explore, because I think we have to respond thoughtfully to the comments. But I'm perhaps more like Tadeo in terms of being very skeptical about expansion. The one area, and this is what peeks ahead, where I can see some room that's consistent with our original thinking and discipline, is performance measures that are part of ratios. And the staff touches on that in, I'll legitimize my comment about this by pointing out that the staff does touch on that briefly in 35A. But I think what I'll encourage you to think about is, rather than scoping in that whole population of MPMs, focusing on the performance piece of that ratio. And then we can rely on Zach's assurance that people can handle the long division themselves, if they have more confidence in the consistency of the calculation of that performance measure. And I think if we stick with performance, we also then, it would help us sell it to those who may be very cautious in their support for us taking this big step forward with MPMs. And also there'd be maybe, Nick, fewer of the issues that you raised about adapting disclosure requirements as the population expands. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Bruce.
Thanks very much, Hans. Sure, there's a lot of comment on this. Somebody mentioned this as being a Pandora's box, and to me, that's exactly what we've done. We've opened this up, put the concept out there, and I guess the overwhelming support, and I'll echo what was said earlier, which surprised me so much being across the board, is that we need to look at these. From my point of view, I'm actually in the camp of very much supporting the extending of the scope. And the reason I say that is when I looked at the factors and some of those factors they put in Paragraph 29, et cetera, I worry that somewhere along the line, we've got to draw, well, what we're doing at the moment is drawing a line in the sand. We're saying we're going to say there are certain items that are performance within the P&L and other items that aren't. What worries me is that I don't think we take into account the other nuances that we brought up, the other principles in the paper. We've spoken about things like communications management has, things that they do. Different industries, different countries communicate differently to the way their users use their information. And what worries me is that we've gone out there and said, well, we're only going to limit MPMs to these. And if you're an industry or country where there are other ones that aren't based on the P&L that are your users want, well, then we're going to completely exclude those. And I guess conceptually, in my mind, I have to be kind of convinced that line we're drawing is going to get me to the right answer, where I'm trying not to justify why some being disclosed and mandatory in terms of what we're saying and the other ones aren't. I'm also not convinced by the arguments that some have run around the additional cost for preparers. I mean, I think the way we're defining these, and if we just watch the definition, we can ensure that effectively these are numbers that are already being prepared. We're putting them out in public communications. We're using them in briefings where companies are getting out and doing that. So yes, there may be a little bit more for the disclosures, but they're not going to be hunting for this information. So the information's already there for them. I do understand the comments around timing and scope, and I'm not going to try and make them sound like small issues. I think there's a massive amount of value in this project. We do want to get it out, but I think we've got to weigh that up with responding to what constituents have told us and making sure what we put out is great value. I'll echo something Nick said that worries me. If we did take this and put this into a separate project, and I can't remember if it was somewhere in this paper or somewhere else, we had a discussion around where somebody was saying, well, let's wait and see. Maybe there's a separate project that comes out, something like the agenda consultation. We can't do that. That's going to take this something that I think is so value, put it on the back burner, and we're never going to see it in the light of day for the next couple of years. I also think that we've got to be careful justifying that and saying, oh, well, we'll look at it later by not extending the scope. I think either conceptually we've got to have a reason we don't accept the scope, or we do. As for how we do that and whether I would agree with it in the end, a lot of that to me would depend on how we extend the scope. So, and I'm not going to jump ahead to the next one because I'll comment on that, but I just think that we've got to be careful understanding that a decision to extend the scope, I think there are easier ways to do it and harder ways to do it. And I think that if we take a very hard route in terms of these arbitrary lines, that's where we're going to get to the challenges. But we'll pick up a bit of that in the next question.
Gen-Chao.
Thank you, Hans. I also have cautious on expanding, you know, the scope too far. I think a couple of reasons, I think many of reasons has been raised. For example, whether it really meets the objective and the scope of this project. Are we really willing to expand too far of the scope and objective? Secondly, I do think it takes time if we are going to expand too far. For example, we need to develop additional disclosure requirement. Currently, the disclosure requirement based on subtotals, and it's easy to develop a reconciliation requirement based on those subtotals. If we introduce the management performance measures based on the balance sheet, how can we develop those additional disclosure requirements? How to ask them to, you know, to disclose the reconciliation information? And even we develop some kind of solution, I worry about there is a risk because we didn't consult too much with preparers and others. So there is a risk there, you know, at this stage. So this is why I also have, although those information are really useful, and whether we need to do, you know, fully in this project, or whether we can think about other potential projects. For example, the cash flow statement project would will be included in the potential, will be included in the third, you know, agenda consultation. But in the meantime, I also support to explore a little bit further to expand the existing, you know, scope. For example, some ratio actually mentioned in the paper, for example, the return of capital employed. I think that's this kind of ratio basically still based on the financial performance statement. So for this kind of narrow approach, I think it's worthwhile to explore. See, you know, only a little bit of spend further, not only limited to subtotals, but actually can, you know, explore a little bit further to expand a little bit further, but still basically based on the statement of financial performance. So I think just the narrow scope explanation, but not too far. So this is my view. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jen Chao. Rika.
Thank you, Hans. Thank you for staff our excellent paper. And I know, I mean, I truly think after receiving this feedback, I cannot say no. So I mean the position may be very similar to what Jin Chao mentioned. We need to carefully assess the feasibility, whether and to what extent we can expand the scope of MPM. But I truly draw attention to the one point, especially because alternative measures and MPMs, those are used to explain the entity's performance result outside the financial statement. Those are the primary use of the alternative measures, and so we call the MPMs. So I truly have a concern and cautious about the volume of the information that might be implemented or introduced by the expansion of the MPM at the end. We should carefully consider about the balance of the information, because what we can do is to add the transparency and discipline to those MPMs or expanded MPMs in the financial statement. That is just a support for the user to understand more about the reconciliation or the meaning of MPMs and APMs. I believe that the entity would like to explain their financial result and performance by using MPM outside the financial statement. So I believe that the information within the financial statement will not be complete information for the user at the end. So I think MPM has what MPM should achieve is really important, and that is clearly the benefit for our new standards. But still, we need to consider the best balance between the information to be included in the financial statement and probably outside the financial statement.
Tom?
Yes. Can Sorry. You hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, so I just want to echo the comments of Nick, Zach, and Bruce. I think we absolutely need to investigate, and also what Rika just said about we need to evaluate the feasibility. I don't think we need to presume that it's going to be difficult or not, and I think we need to investigate. My personal view is, I think I agree with what Nick said, is that it will be possible to accommodate. And certainly with respect to the timing, I think slowing down the project would be a bad thing. On the other hand, there's the opposite timing. If this is a very valuable addition, then making it wait for years is also not such a good thing. And I'll make one comment. When I go through all the positive reasons for doing the MPMs that we've included, I find that the expansions that are being considered, virtually all of them would apply to those items when I check it. So the benefit, I think, is there, subject to feasibility. And so I think we need to take a careful look and then make a decision on that basis.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Martin.
Yeah, thanks, Hans. I'm not in favor of extending the scope and looking into that because I think we started the project on, we call it primary financial statements, and we limited it into the performance statement, and I think that is a focus. For me, the rationale was also because now we're giving restrictions to the income statement and saying, okay, we're defining operating, which is in our definition, people cannot use their own stuff. Therefore, I think we, what Sue said in the discussion to the other topic, you have to look at it as a package. And my understanding was we look into the MPMs now because, okay, we restricted to subtotals, which are performance. And therefore, we allowing what entity-specific management view of that is. And therefore, I can we have a note then saying, okay, what is your primary management performance measure on subtotals performance, but not on what we now extending the scope on debt equity ratios, on cash flow ratios, whatever kind of stuff, because I think maybe that is of interest. Yes, I would agree, but it's not the scope of this project. And even if we get this feedback, I think, okay, we should stick, and our success in that was that we focused on the scope which we have done or not on any other areas, because also many people said, okay, cash flow statements are not the right thing. And if you look at banks, they say even what we require from them is not meaningful in any case, but we will not look into that now. And staff recommendation is also to say not look into that now. And I don't know why we should do it here, because maybe it is in many people think now performance management performance measure is something new and something good, and we have the reconciliation and we have audited. But I think that was not the scope of our project now, to look at other measures which is related to cash flows or to financial position, debt equity ratios and indebtedness or whatever kind of stuff. I don't know if we should do it in this kind of project. If people want us to doing that, we have the agenda consultations and we can look at that and maybe have a broader project on all other alternative measures. But I think this project was focused, and I think that was part of the success of this project, that it was focused. And we should not now deviate from that, and we will enter into a lot of discussions, because if we look at, for example, if debt equity ratios, we don't have a financial IFRS defined measure into that. And then we're proposing if others, management thinks, okay, it's a good measure, and to which measure we should reconcile it. And then what users think, it is a good measure, isn't there, because there is not an existing IFRS measure, maybe that is the only measure that must be a good measure. And all these kind of questions we have to answer, and therefore I think we should not extend the scope and should stick what we have done and limit it to performance and also to management performance measures, which are subtotals. Thanks.
Françoise.
Yes, thank you for giving me the floor again. I mean, it's listening to this conversation that I felt the need to clarify, in fact, what I mean and what I think. First of all, far from me of not considering the feedback received and ignoring it. Obviously, I think that's what we're doing right now. So that's the first point. Second, of course, I mean, whatever could remain performance related and fit in the requirement that we have already designed, I think should be looked into as a small variation from what we have already presented. Third, I think Doug and Nick have extremely clearly explained that the real benefit of expanding the scope would be to have for users a comprehensive note where management performance measures would be reconciled. And that's the message that I have also received very clearly. And in fact, it is this message on which I built the idea that we should work on that now, not after the agenda consultation, now, but in a different stream than the mainstream delivering what we have promised to deliver. I know from my memory of what the ISP has done in the past, I've never seen that happen. It's not forbidden to be innovative in our processes in order to best respond to the demands of our constituents, because users first also want a fast delivery on the performance statement and comparability. And they have added a strong request for a comprehensive note. So I think we would save time if we were working now in a different stream on this, because we would not spend the time on looking at possible constraints, possible cuts here and there that you would not be able to justify afterwards. But you would really try to work, I mean, we would try to work delivering what really would be effective for users with this comprehensive note that we have been discussing. So I'm not suggesting that we put anything on a back burner. I'm not suggesting that we disregard comments. I'm suggesting that we do that, but in a separate stream so that we can deliver the comparability in the income statement at a fast pace, while not having ignored the second demand that we seem to have received and that we try to accommodate as well. And a third reason why I think there would be benefit in that separate stream is that we may end up with having to re-expose, or we may have to do some more outreach, or to go more in depth on one aspect or the other. And if we were in a separate stream of work, we would have, while being disciplined and timely in everything that we do, we would have the possibility, we would not have the constraint of being timely with the other, the first stream, the mainstream, the one that we have really started. So my position is really to respond positively, but not making the two together, out of which I think we are going to fail, in fact, in many ways. There won't be timeliness with the income statement, and there won't be the comprehensive note that is really, as Zach and Nick have described, the thing that can be a cost saver, at least for users.
Okay. Like others, I will cautiously answer yes to the question, but with caution, and I wouldn't want the staff to invest months of time in this and then not come with a good outcome. So I think the staff would have to explore as quickly as possible. First, if we do this, can we draw a line clearly? If we cannot, then I think we're in trouble. And another important consideration is, I think, that it has to be possible to make a reconciliation with an IFRS number. I'm not sure if that is the case for all the proposals being made. But if we would lose the reconciliation for certain numbers, then there is no point in doing this, because that's one of the most important disciplinary effects of our proposal. Having said that, shall we have a vote? Who supports the staff's recommendation with all the caution that has been expressed?
So question two.
Yes.
Ten.
Okay. I don't think there's a need to summarize at this point. Okay, Nick, please go on.
Okay, given that decision, we move on to the third section of the paper. So again, we're not asking the board to make a decision here, but given the discussion that's just taken place, we are asking for feedback on the possible approaches to explore for expanding the scope of management performance measures and the factors for evaluating those approaches. A summary of the possible approaches are included in paragraph 61, and the proposed factors for evaluation are summarized in paragraph 62. So the questions for the board are on page 24 and are: A, does the board have any comments or questions on the possible approaches to expanding scope of management performance measures as discussed in paragraph 61? And B, does the board agree the staff should use the factors identified in paragraph 62 to assess the possible approaches for expanding the scope of management performance measures? Are there any other factors the board would like the staff to include in the analysis? And are any of these factors more important than any others?
Mary?
I'll start off. As I reflect on the discussion we just had about doing work to expand or not, it brings me back very much to weighing, asking the staff to evaluate two potentially competing parameters. One is really going back on the comments that Nick and Zach highlighted about feedback about completeness and the risk of fragmentation if some things are in and some things are out. And picking up on a comment, I think it was Nick's, but I'm not sure. I think we are going to have to be explicit about whether things that are not within whatever definition we have of MPMs are permitted or prohibited. I think we were pretty clear that we intended them to be prohibited, but I think we're going to have to make sure that we reach an explicit decision and have an explicit communication about that. And so I think we're going to have to balance that risk of fragmentation that was raised as a consideration, thinking also about responses on fragmentation, like cross-referencing, as whether this is an area that makes sense, with the focus of the project on performance measures. And so when I look at paragraph 62 and the factors that you lay out, I would give very little weight to prevalence of the measure. I think it's good to have some data so we don't chase something that's a rare and unique, rare or unique instance, but I think that should not be determinative. I think going into this, and picking up on something Francois just said, I think if it is related to performance, not to financial, but the subset of financial that is performance related, then, and that could include a component of a ratio that uses performance, then I might be more open to expanding it as a slight modification of our proposal. But as much value as free cash flow, other cash flow measures, net cash, or statement of financial performance metrics might give, and I am not dissing them in any way, I think that is inconsistent with the focus of this project, which is on the performance measure. And given what everybody said in the previous section about, we've had lots of comments about improving the statement of cash flows, we've had comments about other enhancements that are entirely valid comments, we're making progress because we maintain mission focus. And so when I look at paragraph 61 and 62, I'm cautiously supportive of considering 61A and 61D as it relates to performance statement. And I think we're trying to get too many of the greatest hits in paragraph 62, as opposed to maintaining the project focus. So that's a long-winded amplification of my very hesitant to support on question two.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah, so I thought I'd comment on each of the items from paragraph 62. I'm going to start with C because it goes to this question about project objective. In the ED, at the beginning, we state that we want to improve how information is communicated in the financial statements with a focus on information about performance in the statement of profit or loss. And then we go on in the next paragraph to say this responds to strong demand from stakeholders to undertake a project on performance reporting. And depending which of us is speaking, there are three things that could be emphasized. Do we emphasize improve how information is communicated in the financial statements, or focus on the information in the statement of profit or loss, or do we focus on performance reporting? The first is essentially the broadest view of MPMs, the second only those directly traceable to financial statement of financial performance, and the third would bring in any legitimate performance measure, and I think could include any of paragraph 61A, C, or D based on what users told us in the feedback. They do see free cash flow as a performance measure, and they see a whole series of ratios as performance measures. So depending what are which of those is most legitimate, and I think the last point is important one, is a lot of people are concerned with performance, so that might be a partial step between the most extreme and the least. A couple of comments on the others. Prevalence, I think, is a good thing. I'm a bit worried about how we would apply it in that the... I think it's paragraph 53A provides examples that are prevalent, and there's one example for each of the four categories. So if it only takes one example that's really prevalent to get you in, this isn't going to exclude anything. And for financial entities, there's one example for each of the three categories except for the statement of cash flows. So unless prevalence starts getting really awkward, if you're going to say there has to be at least two or something, so I'm not sure how operational it would be, but I think it's legitimate. I just don't know how much help it'll be. With respect to B, usefulness of disclosure requirements for the measures and complexity of the changes, and I think in part this refers to the reconciliation that the staff picked out as being perhaps the most problematic. So I think the benefits, as I said earlier, apply to all of the proposed A through D. And it seemed to me that I kind of draw people's attention, because one of the ways of dealing with this, I'm looking down the road a little bit, is paragraph 106A1 in the exposure draft requires an explanation of how the MPM is calculated, while 106B requires the reconciliation to the most directly comparable subtotal. I think in many, many cases, those two conditions will be solved by exactly the same set of information. People will do a reconciliation and that will give you the calculation. So it kind of goes a little bit to what Hans was saying. I thought reconciliation was necessary, but could a calculation be sufficiently objective and auditable that it would be sufficient? And because and it's interesting, I looked at some examples of places where the reconciliation should be most difficult, and that's the statement of financial position. And ESMA asks for a reconciliation for everything, and they also refer to net debt, but make no exception to the reconciliation. So they're expecting something. And I looked at some examples, and what the examples did is the ones that had couple that had net debt is they didn't reconcile the nearest IFRS measure, but they picked out a couple of IFRS calculated items, added them together, and then that declared that to be what they would reconcile to. And then they put a couple of unusual items. And so basically they had an extended calculation that they split into reconciliation to clearly recognized IFRS and less usual. But to me, that's really devolving into 106A1, just a complete calculation. But they put it in this form, I'm assuming, to be in accord with the ESMA the ESMA requirement. So I think we should take a hard look at how for the ones related to financial position, to how people are responding to that ESMA thing. And we should also think really carefully if we go forward, whether calculation could be robust enough that it effectively takes the place of reconciliation, which is, I think, what's happening out there. On the cash flow statement, I think Nick said it earlier, I think reconciliation to cash flow isn't difficult. We have three categories where we do calculations. Somebody might want to sum two of them to do the reconciliation to, for example, the sum of the operating cash flows and the investing. I don't think that would be problematic. And so I don't know that the cash flow reconciliation would be problematic. I think the balance sheet one might be. Further, coming back to faithful representation, which is complete, neutral, and free from error, I noticed quite a few respondents said that these things are presented as a package in the management commentary, and that you really want them all together because they're all interrelated. And so if we pull a subset, it's going to not provide as complete a narrative, which is kind of the part of faithful representation. So people were making actual arguments that the expansion is part of faithful representation and completeness, I think, which is worth noting. The and then I think if I come down to the very last one, developing a new definition of management performance measures, I think this part would not be, if we decide that the benefits exceed the cost, I don't think this part would be difficult. There's so many people doing these things now, and they're responding to regulators' requirements. So I think that would be doable. So I just kind of encourage, I think you've got the right things. I think we have to apply them and generate the evidence and then come to a decision about whether we go forward or not.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Zach?
So I'd agree with everything Tom just said. And on the factors used to assess the approaches, I think we got those right. I would agree with the staff's recommendation in full. The one thing I would say is on the approaches, I would actually take a look a little bit differently at that. So we went sort of financial statement by financial statement and then considered both line items and ratios within each of those. My suggestion would be to actually look at line items and ratios separately. And the reason for that is there might be less complexity involved in looking at a ratio, for example, that uses an adjusted income statement or profit and loss measure relative to an IFRS statement of financial position item that wouldn't expand our scope much at all, but would allow more of the complete package that Tom referenced to get into one place and wouldn't be much of a scope increase at all. So it would reduce our risks involved with that. But I think looking at each of those is important, and I think actually looking at them separately might peel away some of the complexity that I've heard concerns about.
Nick?
Thanks. Just a few follow-up comments. So I agree, a reconciliation, whatever we do, is absolutely essential. I'm not proposing that we walk away from that. That would undermine all of our work here. Thinking of our existing scope around performance measures from the statement of financial performance, you know, that ends up, left us in a place which is clearly very equity user orientated, and actually says doesn't speak at all in terms of performance to an important constituency around lenders or credit investors at all. They are completely scoped out of it. So I think that's something which we do need to bear in mind. And then lastly, on ratios, there's been some debate around ratios, and I think saying it's fine if we have, let's say, the numerator is captured by our existing proposals, that's helpful. But actually to have a denominator that isn't and has no reconciliation completely ruins any transparency in that ratio and undermines the ratio entirely. And so again, I think this is just an area which we need to explore fully. Thank you.
You're on mute, Hans.
Rika, finally.
Thank you, Hans. So I think to make NPM disclosure useful for the users and other stakeholders, the scope should be clearly understood and consistently applied. So I think so in the future, when we assess the expansion of the NPM scope by using the factors listed in paragraph 62, I really want to make sure about how those factors are interacting with or relating to other points of our discussion of the NPM, especially about clarifying or redefining the public communications, or how we improve the application of the Facebook representation about the NPMs and so on. So I hope to see that in the future discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Sue?
I just wonder, given that you know, there were a range of different perspectives behind the yes vote that the board gave the staff, with some of us very cautious and others really keen, and there's been a range of views expressed on the approach, I just wonder whether it would be good if somebody on the staff could summarise what they think they are planning to do in terms of the investigation, so that we are all have a common set of expectations and the staff aren't sent off on a wild goose chase, because I know that you're not drowning in staff resources either, so it would be terrible for you to spend time on something which is not what people are sort of really signing up for as well. So sorry to put you guys on the spot, but it might save tears later.
Thanks, Sue. Nick, did you want to jump in, or do you want me to jump in here?
Yeah, maybe why don't I do a summary of how I've, what I've heard, and then you can jump in if you've heard anything different that I might have missed. So I think, as you said, Sue, we've certainly got a yes, but with a lot of cautionary comments along with that, and I think, as Mary said, we have obviously a very fine balance to try and achieve here. It sounds like we've got the factors about right, and it's about assessing this balance between costs and benefits. I'm feeling from the previous discussion we've got a lot more weighting, I think, in terms of those factors along alignment with our current objective. That seems to be quite important to many of those that expressed caution. So I think while we didn't say that in the discussion about those factors, I think I'm hearing quite clearly that that is important to many of you. Timeliness is also clearly a factor, but I think this has been expressed in two forms. One, in terms of the project as a whole and moving those ahead and how this might impact that, but also the validity of any benefits to the expansion and the timeliness of achieving those is also something that we need to think about. Yes, and then I think the links also to, there's also been some links made between public communications and faithful representation, which are features of other aspects that we intend to bring later. So I think there's some thinking that we need to do about the order of how we address these topics. So I think those are the key bits that I've taken away. I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
Yes, I mean, that's I agree with everything you've said there. And, you know, certainly we have heard a lot emphasis on the project objective and focus, even though Tom has helpfully highlighted how this can also be interpreted quite differently. But I take many of you made this reference thinking about the part that relates to P&L focus/performance reporting, recognizing that these are not necessarily identical. I think what was helpful from the comments we have heard, several of you have said, expressed the risk of possible disclosure overload. And, you know, this is something we have to consider. I think we had a similar risk expressed going into the exposure draft. We found with the field work that actually this was not substantiated in practice based on the evidence we have seen, but certainly with any expansion of scope, we need to keep an eye on that. So that's, you know, possibly something to look at. And, you know, this is the evidence we're not going to get through our research on prevalence in practice and, you know, how many measures from currently, I think in the field work companies had maximum 4. You know, does this mean we might end up with situations where companies will have 10 different management performance measures, which I'm, you know, think some of you would possibly consider as disclosure overload. So I think that was useful. I think, you know, in the factors, it's already there in the paper, but several of you emphasized that in terms of feasibility, reconciliation is the key. And I heard some of you expressing concern that in particular with balance sheet measures, we don't have necessarily all the anchors that we have for the statement of profit or loss, and therefore utility of that reconciliation could be diminished, and also practically it might be difficult to achieve. But then again, I heard some of you mentioning ESMA examples and so on, so something to look at. Now, it's very clear there's a range of views expressed, so it's not a consensus which would give us kind of easy job of approaches to focus on, but it seems very clear also to me that most of you have some appetite towards looking at a small increment at least, you know, such as ratios closely linked to what currently would meet definition of management performance measures. So that would probably be something we look at and kind of say, is it as easy as it seems now, having considered it properly? But at the same time, you know, keep an eye out. And I think, Mary, you helpfully expressed that completeness of the measures and, you know, what are the risks there. So I'm not now going to commit exactly to how we're going to bring the next paper, because I would like to do a round of, you know, brainstorming with the team and discuss perhaps some of the different approaches. So I will leave you hanging with that, but I can certainly assure we'll consider all the feedback we have had and from these discussions. And I think, Mary, you have a further suggestion on this.
Listen, Aida, our message to you was basically go figure it out and don't take too much time.
Oxymoron, Hans.
But just to be,
I would encourage you to, when you have the feeling I hit a brick wall, to come back to the board as quickly as possible. And then Sue and Mary have some suggestions.
I'm not sure if I have a suggestion, just an observation. I don't think that I, speaking for myself, would be thinking that you should go away and do what you've set out in paragraphs 61 and 62 and then come back and tell me what you have concluded, because I think that's a lot of work. If you look at all of these different measures and how the reconciliations might work and how big the scope is and all of this sort of stuff, I think that's a lot of work. And I'm just, I wonder whether it would make sense to have a sort of interim step where you come back and have a way of testing, you know, this is how you're thinking of exploring it or something like that, because I'm just... And I am trying to empathise. I might sound like I'm being difficult. I'm trying to empathise because you've got somebody like me who's saying, please don't do very much. And you've got somebody like Nick who's saying, please do quite a lot. And they're both valid views. They're just very different views. And I know as a staff member, it's really hard to know then what to do. And if you think that we've basically said, go and look at 61 and 62, I'm hoping that's not what you've heard.
Mary?
A specific suggestion to help us move forward in this area without taking a view on which direction to go. I think two sets of information that would be very helpful to me, useful to me in terms of making decisions about whatever the staff brings are a slightly deeper dive on the feedback we got on two issues. The concerns about fragmentation of and the concerns and therefore the costs of the fragmentation risk, you know, and just really getting a lot of granularity in terms of what we heard and patterns of who we heard it from, either functional and to Nick's point about equity versus debt investors, you know, even more granularity on that. And the second is a slightly deeper dive in terms of any the support that we got for management performance measures, but any limits on that support, whether people express conditions or why, when explaining why they concluded they could support this, if there were conditions or parameters that we should be particularly sensitive to as we make any subsequent decisions because of concern about loss of that support. So my comment is less about which factors or which issues you look at, but I think in order to assess anything you bring, it would be helpful to have those two sets of information from the feedback as background for our consideration of subsequent proposals.
Okay. That brings us to the end of this discussion. There's only one paper left and tempted to go on, but perhaps it would be good just to have a brief break because it's very tiring to work like this. And I see Aida nodding emphatically. So let's take a 15 minutes break till 12:30.